I'm Molly Wansell.
And I'm Geoffrey Wansell.
And for the last 16 years or thereabouts, we have been having lunch every Saturday, and often our conversation turns to murder.
And that's what's prompted us to launch this true crime podcast called Blood Ties.
Hi everyone, welcome back to the Blood Ties podcast. I'm Molly Wansell and I'm here with my father, Geoffrey Wansell.
Hello everyone, welcome back. Welcome back to what will be the last Blood Ties podcast, because Molly and I are gently slipping over the horizon into wherever podcasts go to die.
I like the idea of that. We're just walking over the hill together into the sunset.
Into the sunset and waving gently as we depart. But it's been an absolute honour, a thrill, a privilege to broadcast for you all for all these years. 5.5 years of it. And, well, it's an astonishing and a privilege to do it. So thank you all for listening. Thank you for being there. Thank you for taking the trouble and time and for writing to us, which we are all immensely grateful for, both Molly and I.
Yeah, thanks, everyone. Thanks, Dad.
It's a pleasure.
You're the one who's made it all, made it happen. Well, not made it happen, not the right.
No, you made it happen.
But, you know, you're the one who does it. I just turn up.
Well, I think it's wonderful. So I'm going to bow out with a story which is suggested to us by one of our very kind listeners, and with suggesting a few books. And I'm going to try and make an appearance on Instagram, but I have to learn how to do it. So that's the sort of next, that's my next learning curve.
Well, we'll put something up on the Blood Ties Instagram today.
Yes. And saying thank you and sorry to say goodbye, but we are. I'm going to try and be very regular on Instagram. Once I get myself tuned into it, I know I can do it. It just takes time, and I'm not, as they say, getting any younger. But never mind. So first things first, Mo. Good week. Good fortnight. Good time. You've been very busy.
Very
I know that.
Stressful week this week.
Successful?
Stressful.
Stressful. Oh dear. Well, you do stressful things, Mo.
I know.
You know.
Not for long. I'm going to back it all in.
What? You're going to become a hermit?
I'm going to pack it in and move to the country. but yeah, I had a really difficult week, but it's over now, so.
Well, I had a endlessly complicated week with lots and lots of things. I had to host a dinner for members of the club who'd been there for 10 years. So I'm a trustee, taking in turns to host dinners for people who've been there 5 years, 10 years, 15 years, 25 years, 50 years.
Mm.
And my rota this week was the 10-year members. I had a very nice lunch, very jolly people. I had David Morrissey on my left and Robert Powell on my right.
Mm.
And they were both very jolly.
Doesn't sound endlessly difficult to me.
And they
like going to a dinner and having a nice
time.
And
they discovered that they were neighbours, which I thought was quite fun.
Oh, nice.
In fact, they started talking about each other's wisteria. Very sweet. I had a dinner about, what we're going to do with the investments. Just a lot of it, a lot of it. But yesterday I stayed at home and that didn't really make me all that cheerful. I don't quite know why. I get a bit housebound.
Well, you work from home, so it's a bit much, probably.
Yeah, I get a bit housebound. And that shows itself up on Sundays. Never my favourite day.
No.
But I get housebound.
Why don't you go out?
Well, it's a long story. Most of it very boring. But, okay, before we start on the story, I want to just mention three books. One is by the man I regard as the doyen of crime correspondence, Martin Brunt of Sky, who's written a book called No One Got Cracked Over the Head for No Reason, Dispatches from a Crime Reporter.
Catchy title.
It is very good. He's an excellent crime reporter. He makes a series of really good points. and is particularly critical of the relationship with the police, between journalists and the police, post-Leveson report.
What's the Leveson report?
Leveson report was an investigation into phone hacking.
Oh, yeah, the phone remember? Hacking.
And Leveson essentially suggested that there should be a much more formal relationship between journalists and the police than there had been in the past. But the book is excellent. It's very good on a whole string of stories, some of which I covered. And it's extremely good in every way. So if you want an idea of what it's like to be a crime correspondent, and Martin really is the very best of them, then I recommend it highly. The second is a book from a man who, and this again is interesting. This is the first time I've heard of an undercover detective writing a truthful book. He was an undercover detective for the Met. You know how incredibly controversial that became because of the relationship between...
Because they kept doing all that dodgy stuff, like marrying people and stuff.
Yeah,
yeah.
But this is, it's called The Buyer, by a man called Liam Thomas. And the reason it's called The Buyer is because in the early days, pioneering undercover detectives were known as buyers. And that is what is required. A look that says, I want what you have, and I'm willing to pay for it. It's very good. It's very dark because, even in the end, he was discovered. And it cost him everything, the marriage. And it's a very bleak picture of being an undercover. It was the first time I remember a real non-fiction account of what it's like.
I actually can't think of anything worse than being an undercover.
Undercover. Well, it's very interesting. He has an imaginary...
Or a spy. I'd be terrible at it.
He has an imaginary friend, a dog called Marv, whom he talks to in difficult times.
Fair enough.
And finally, a book which the publicists recommended to us specifically, to Blood Tie specifically.
Uh-huh.
This is a book called The Last Word. It's fiction. It's written by a TikTok sensation called Taylor Adams.
That's going to be you soon.
TikTok
sensation Jeffrey Wansel.
It's a very interesting concept. I'm not going to spoil the story for you, but basically... this lady is house-sitting on the Washington coast in America with only her golden retriever for company. And she likes the isolation and peace, and it's right on the beach. But she reads constantly on her Kindle. And she finishes two books a day, but that one she thinks is rather poorly written. And it's a sort of gruesome kind of horror story about stalking. So she leaves a one-star review on Kindle and is immediately contacted by the author, a man called H.G. Kane. You can get the references if you care to. H.G. Wells, Citizen Kane. He's furious. She brushes it off. And then... of course, disturbing incidents start to occur. She thinks there's a man in the house, and she's only got her golden retriever for company, and she gets strange messages.
As long as the dog doesn't die, I don't mind.
No, the dog doesn't
die. Okay, in which case it's fine.
But it's really addictive, and it's the sort of book that, once started... It's a real woman in peril story, really. And she's stalked by the author and how she responds. It's very interesting.
Nice.
So there are three books just to keep you going.
Great.
The Last Word by Taylor Adams, which is published by Hodder and Stoughton. The Buyer by Liam Thomas, which is published by Ebury. And No One Got Cracked Over the Head for No Reason, which is published, as I recall, by Biteback. Just making sure I've got that right. Yes, Biteback. So there you are, little starter. And the story we're going to do today, Mo, as our farewell, was suggested by Ruth King. I have actually done this story before, but it's It's quite a good one, and it's quite straightforward.
Not on the podcast. You've done it before.
I've done it for World's Most Evil Killer, Britain's Most Evil Killers. Mm. We did it in series 3, mm-hmm. and I'm now on series 8, so it's quite some time ago.
Feels like series 18.
Well, it's, it feels like... you're talking about my income here. I'm still working, you know.
I know that better than anyone, don't you worry.
Yeah. Anyway, the story is about a man from Yorkshire, North Yorkshire, called Mark Richard Hobson. And I think we're going to call it The Spree Killer.
Okay, well, here we go with the final ever Blood Ties podcast, The Spree Killer.
Mark Richard Hobson was born on the 2nd of September 1969, which means he's now 53. And he's one of the few people in Britain to have killed four people in a one-week period. They were premeditated killings, and he pleaded guilty to the killings in the end. But that comes at the termination of the story. He was born into a very stable mining family in Wakefield, West Yorkshire. His parents were Peter and Sandra, and he had sisters, Melanie and Leslie. He was a happy, stable, ordinary boy. In fact, one teacher called him very well behaved and so average and ordinary that he was almost anonymous. In 1991, when he would have been in his very early 20s, he moved in with his childhood sweetheart, who was called Kay Hopcroft, who had two children from a previous relationship. And the couple went on to have a daughter of their own. So that it's a family of mother, father and three children. They got married in 1993, just after Kay gave birth to her child with Mark Hobson. So far, you might say, so ordinary. He worked at the Drax power station in Yorkshire and also did some work as a landscape gardener. He was a perfectly ordinary, quite smiley, quite unprepossessing. His wife, Kay, later called him a perfect husband. But in 1998, he got a job as a nightclub bouncer in Selby, in West Yorkshire. I'm sorry, I better make this. I think it's West Yorkshire, but it might be North Yorkshire. Forgive me if you come from Selby. Now, something in that change of occupation or in that change of environment affected Mark Hobson really quite severely. And on the 1st of January 1999, out of the blue, he announces that he's leaving the family. As his wife was to put it, he just didn't want married life anymore. No reason was given. There wasn't anybody else. It was just... Well, I privately think there was something else going on, but I'll come to that in a moment. I think he began to lose contact with reality. And I think one reason for that is that he started experimenting with drugs, which he'd accessed by means of being a nightclub bouncer. He started drinking heavily, and as his wife was later to say, he became like a zombie. His life just went completely off the rails. There is no obvious reason for this. It was no psychotic break. He just simply turned upside down what had been a perfectly normal family life. And then in 2002, he got into an argument with a man in Selby whom he decided, for reasons that are still slightly uncertain, to stab this chap in front of a whole lot of shoppers. I mean, it was broad daylight, and he stabs him in the chest. He called him at one point a love rival. His contact with reality.
Did that person he stabbed didn't die?
The person married, three children, upright, got a job. He should get community punishment. That would later become a subject of William Brace, and he stabbed him 5 times, puncturing his lung. He pleaded guilty to unlawful wounding, and he was considered a low risk to the public. He was sentenced to just 100 hours of community service. Now, Hobson moves in with a girl called Claire Sanderson, who is 27. We're now in July 2004. Hobson is in his 30s. Claire is a little younger, and she's a twin. She has a twin brother, twin sister called Diane, but she's called Claire. Now, I don't think Claire fully knew the danger she was putting herself in, because it's now abundantly clear that Mark Hobson is not only taking a lot of cannabis, but is also drinking very heavily indeed. At one point, it was estimated he was drinking 20 pints of lager a day.
What?
Which is a lot of lager.
It's just hard physically to drink that much lager.
Well, I agree, but nevertheless.
Poor bloke, obviously, not having a good time. I mean, not poor, you know what I mean.
Well, they lived in a place called Gamblesforth, which is near Selby. And they shared a flat in Millfield Drive. It's now Sunday the 11th of July. And for reasons that we simply do not know, Mark Hobson killed Claire Sanderson. He hit her over the head with a hammer 17 times and then strangled her. And to add insult to injury, he then put her body in bin bags and kept it in the bedroom. Why? Even Molly's shaking her head here.
Obviously having a difficult time.
Yeah. But things get even darker, because Hobson has decided, and he admitted this privately afterwards, he decided that he'd chosen the wrong twin. And that he really fancied her sister, twin sister Diane, who had a boyfriend called Ian.
So he killed her because he fancied her sister more than her?
Yes, because he'd come up with a plan. After keeping the body for a week, on Saturday the 17th of July, he telephoned Diane, the twin sister, and told her that her sister Claire was ill with glandular fever and wanted her to visit her. There was no sexual attack on Claire. Diane arrives at the flat to see her sister. Well, first of all, recognised pretty quickly the terrible smell because of her sister's decomposing body in the bedroom. But within a matter of minutes, Hobson attacks her. She too was struck on the head with the same hammer as he'd killed Claire. But this time she's tortured and tied up. She's disposable razor and scissors, all manner of things.
Oh, God, don't.
No, I'm not going into it. Again, the cause of death was determined to be strangulation. So, in other words, he'd hit her repeatedly and then strangled her. He had put a plastic bag over her head. But she had been sexually assaulted. That same day, Hobson goes to the pub after killing Diane and meets Diane's boyfriend, Ian.
Wait, he plans to meet him or he just meets him by chance?
No, I think it was by accident.
Okay.
Hobson invites Ian round to the flat, who quickly notices A, the smell, and B, that's pretty disturbed. So Hobson is clearly now in a psychotic break. Hobson, in the early hours of Sunday, the 18th of July, Molly's signalling me to get closer to the microphone.
Not closer, just in front of it.
Hobson persuades his mother to drive him to York District Hospital, saying that the two girls, Diane and Claire, had been knocked down and that he was going to visit them. Well, not surprisingly, later that morning, Sunday the 18th of July 2004, the bodies were discovered by, tragically, their father, as well as Diane's boyfriend, Ian. And at 8:09 a.m. that morning, the police are informed of the deaths of both. Well, this is clearly a most dramatic break. Hobson goes on the run. And the same day that the bodies of the twin sisters are discovered, an elderly couple called James and Joan Britton, who lived in Strensall in York, near York. Well, they were an elderly couple. They lived alone, but Mr. Britton was deaf and suffered from Parkinson's. Mrs. Britton had rather poor eyesight and used a walking frame. For reasons that we do not know, Hobson attacked them both. He battered Mr. Britton over the head with a walking stick before stabbing him, and then stabbed poor Mrs. Britton to death. So fiercely indeed that he snapped off the blade of the knife he used inside the body. Well, the police are called, and it's the same morning that they've been called to discover the bodies of the twins. Well, it doesn't take the police very long to identify that they need to speak to Mark Hobson, who's after all been living with Claire, and they release the names and say they'd like to speak to Hobson. The following day, the police say the two double murders may well be linked, and indeed, as the week progresses, they produce evidence that the murders were indeed linked, forensic evidence that they were indeed linked. Plus, Hobson had tried to sell Diane's car to friends for £400 on the evening she was murdered. Mark Hobson becomes, for a very brief time, Britain's most wanted man. You know, picture 12 police forces are alerted, 500 sightings. He's been spotted everywhere from Britain to New Zealand. In fact, he's not really gone anywhere much at all. And on the 25th of July, a week after the treble murders, he's spotted by a garage owner called Derek North, who recognises him, and armed police are called. He's in Shipton, 10 miles from Strensall, where he killed Mr. and Mrs. Britton. He's gone in to buy a drink. He's taken a cocktail of drink. He said, had admitted. He admitted at once that he was a murderer. And he said he'd taken a cocktail of drink and drugs before killing the Britons. And he lost what he said was a day and a half of his life, and he didn't know where it had gone. The detective superintendent who investigated the case said, "We do not know his motives or why he turned into a vicious killer. He was interviewed at length but gave no explanation for his actions." At his trial in April 2005, he admitted all four killings without a moment's hesitation and with no pretense of pleading not guilty. He became the first prisoner in Britain to be given a whole life term after admitting the murders. That's now more familiar, but at that point in 2005, it was normally regarded that if you admitted the killings, you would not be sentenced to prison without parole.
Oh, I see what you mean. Right. Yeah, yeah. Because if you plead guilty, then they're...
Yeah. Yeah. And indeed, later on,
I mean,
as time...
That's a pretty stupid rule, isn't it?
Well, it's a rule. Later on, he was to appeal his sentence because he had pleaded guilty. The Lord Chief Justice, Nicholas Phillips, then told him that he agreed with the trial judge's recommendation, saying that, in his opinion, Hobson should never be released, regardless of the guilty plea, since the murders had been so horrific. In January 2006, letters were released from Wakefield, where Hobson blamed alcohol for his killing spree. Well, I'm not very good at blaming alcohol for killing four people in the space of a week. I've known a lot of alcoholics in my time, and I don't think that's an explanation. I think a mixture of alcohol and drugs is never exactly conducive to calm, but still, that is testing it a bit. Hobson's other claim to fame, if you call it that, is that when he was, after his given life with the recommendation that he should never be released, he attacked Ian Huntley, the Soham killer.
What, in prison?
In prison. He poured scalding water over him and was given 3 months solitary confinement. A prison spokesman said, "Due to the nature of high security prisoners, it's impossible to prevent incidents of this nature occasionally happening." Make of that as you will. Mark Hobson is certainly not notorious. I mean, he certainly isn't Ian Huntley or Peter Sutcliffe or any of the more famous killers that we've talked about. But he certainly justifies, he's certainly a serial killer, the justification being you have to kill more than three people.
Mm.
He's certainly a spree killer because it was clearly done in a spree, sparked by the killing of Claire, and then the three together, her sister and then the two elderly people, it's a spree. And he has to this day given no proper explanation for why he did it. He's still only 53. He could well spend the next 25, 30 years in prison. He has been in Wakefield, ironically not far from where he was born. Mm. And it's one of those things that we've talked about a lot, Mo, haven't we? You know, it seems banal. I mean, he was a perfectly normal, stable childhood. He wasn't abused in any way. There was no track record of petty crime. He hadn't tortured animals or committed arson or any of those serial killer 101 characteristics that we can all point to. In fact, he was exactly the opposite. Until something happened. So that is the case of Mark Hobson.
The spree killer, thanks.
The spree killer.
I mean, I would say thanks, but we really went out on a really... That was pretty horrible.
Well, I have spared you some of the detail.
Yeah, like, thank God. not one of my favourites.
No, you like poisoners. We started with a poisoner. We should really have finished with
a
poisoner. But we have done
or
a few.
Victorian woman.
Yeah.
Or just a Victorian generally. But yes, you very graciously covered lots and lots of ones that I've had more.
Yes. But this did come from a listener. A very
thank you, Ruth.
Enthusiastic listener who was very polite and sweet and suggested it would be a really good case. And she obviously came from that part of the world, of course.
Yeah, yeah.
He's not a household name, is he?
No, I don't know him.
You know, it's not someone you'd think, oh, Mark Hobson. And yet, if you look at it in terms of horror, they were horrific crimes.
Yeah, but we've covered more than one horrific crime that isn't well known.
Yeah, banality of evil, isn't
many
it?
Many more.
It's our old friend, banality of evil.
Many, many more.
So, Mo, what, are you sad to be giving up?
Yeah, I very much enjoyed our...
I have.
Our time together.
Yes.
I mean, we're lucky because we see each other all the time anyway. But it's an really, what an amazing thing to have, a sort of archive of a period of our lives.
Yes.
All our chitter-chatter about what we've been up to. Some people I know can't stomach the content. They just listen to the beginning and the end.
Well, that's perfectly reasonable. Mm. I wouldn't blame them for that. I am going to miss it. But I'm going to try and...
We're going to find another...
I'm going to find another way.
Jeffrey's going to pop up somewhere. Just give us a minute. We're going to work out how to do it. We just need a bit of help.
Yes, we need a bit of technical expertise.
We need some guidance from someone who's probably at least 20 years younger than me and much younger.
That'll make him 50 years younger than me. We should add that both Molly and I... Molly's approaching 40 and I'm approaching 80. So
okay, I'm actually 40 this year. You're still 2 years and a half. A
I'm 2 years and 3 months away from being 80.
From 80.
It still feels it. I feel every day of it.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's been an enormous fun.
It's been an absolute ride. We've had some good ones. We've had some...
Horrible ones.
We've had some times. We've had some tech struggles.
Yes, we have. I shall miss it.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, you know, things do have a life cycle, don't they?
Yeah.
And I think it's good to go out when you're in front.
Got to find a new...
Rather than just sort of tailing off, you know. It's really good to go out with a little bit of a...
Yeah.
Bit of a smile.
Yeah, it's all good. We're going to work out a new plan. And thank you to everyone who supported us on Patreon.
Yes, thank you to everyone.
We'll close down our account.
Yes, we'll do.
But Jeffrey will pop back up somewhere at some point so you can support him in a different way in the future.
Yes, I think the most likely thing I'll do is Instagram.
I mean, the people are saying it should be TikTok, Dad.
Well, if it should be TikTok, TikTok is what it'll be.
I think it's the video content that the people need.
Okay,
got to work out how to do it.
Yeah.
We've got a good idea, so...
Well, and all we need is one really good advisor.
Yeah.
To help me do it.
Yeah, exactly.
So that's the state.
If any listener knows anything about making content, please do reach out. we'll get there. We'll get there.
We shall, and I'm, you know, very optimistic about it. I don't want to abandon all the lovely people who've written to me and...
Well, you know, Jeffrey is always popping up on the TV and you can always contact him still through his website. You'll find his email address.
Yes, absolutely.
So infinitely contactable. And if you guys have any ideas of things that you think would really work, like smart ideas of...
Please tell us.
How to get Jeffrey out there a bit more and, like, you know, if you think Instagram or TikTok or YouTube, whatever you guys think might be a good way of, like, reaching out.
Yeah.
I mean, idea would be to do something similar, you know, still do the content. It's just the way that we present it.
Always, also, I think the other part of it, Mo, is that because you've got busier and busier, it's just hard for us to find the time to be together.
Oh, well, I think it's just hard for me to do the podcast in the way I used to because it is almost like a whole second job and I just don't have the capabilities.
I mean, that's what I mean about life cycles. You know, there are cycles. And I've done it in, you know, columns I've done for newspapers or you can do that much, but then you have to find another way.
Yeah.
You have to find a different platform or a different way. And I think that's generic. I think that's organic.
Yeah.
In other words, I don't see this as, disappearing completely. I think it's just a transformation,
isn't it?
Part of
the journey, yeah.
Yeah, that's another part of the journey, next bit of the journey.
Yeah. So, and we probably wouldn't even have thought of that as part of the journey if we hadn't done this.
No, we wouldn't.
You know?
We wouldn't.
So hopefully we'll get somewhere with that and that will be, you know, the result of all the work we've done here and all the audience we've built. And
Yes. Yes, and I think that's what makes it so positive. It's not goodbye. It's simply, well, we're transforming.
Yeah. And Jeffrey's going to be at CrimeCon this year again. You're going to be on the Woodcut panel and he's going to be doing a book signing. I did check in on that this week.
Did you? Well done. June 10 and 11, isn't it?
Yeah, but you're doing the Sunday.
I'm doing 11. The 11th.
And I'm going to go just to hang out with Jeffrey, but we won't obviously be on Podcast Row because we won't be a podcast anymore.
We're post-podcast.
But we'll be there if you want to come and say hi.
Yep, do. I tend to pop into it now rather than stay there all the time.
Yeah, because it's quite weird in there.
It can get quite odd.
There's no windows. That's my issue.
Haven't they moved the venue?
Maybe there's windows in this
might
new
be,
one.
There might be windows.
If there's windows, I feel very differently.
Yes, it is a bit odd.
Yeah.
The previous venue was a bit
subterranean.
When
we went to the first one, we were like two floors down. You were just like being in a cruise ship.
Yes, just except like you didn't see out the window.
In the bowels of, well, in the sort of, yeah.
There were no portholes.
Yeah, just...
But, but I will be at CrimeCon UK on Sunday the 11th of June this year, along with Mo briefly.
Yeah.
And so look forward to seeing you. Come and find me. You come and find us, come for that.
Yeah.
And very much look forward to meeting you, seeing you. Please contact us. Suggestions are very, very welcome. How might I transform this?
What would you like to see, Jeffrey?
What would you like
do?
To see?
Yeah.
And I think that's the best.
And what do you guys use the most in terms of how you access other content that you find interesting relating to true crime or anything, just yes, people's yeah. social media?
That's really that's what I'd like to leave with.
Mm.
How would you like... This, how would you like to see this transform to something that would be accessible to you, doing broadly the same thing?
But just without me.
Well,
I won't be there. Jeffrey will be doing it. But thank you. I will do a big thank you. Thank you to Sam, our producer, who's been amazing and just looked after us so well. And to Poppy, who was our producer before, who also looked after us incredibly well. We're so lucky because they are exactly what we're talking about, two young people who knew how to help us because we knew we wanted to do a podcast, but Lord, we did not know how to do any of the stuff that means you can actually listen to it.
No, we did not. And I repeat Molly's point. I'm enormously grateful to both Poppy and to Sam.
And also we did many moons ago get the assistance of someone called Barney.
Barney.
Who helped us work out the sound, which was like a real issue for a really long time. So Barney Spiegel, thank you very much.
Thank you, Barney.
For all your help to my brother Dan, who wrote the music for us. That's so nice that it was always in the family. And my friend George, who I went to school with from the age of 7 and is a very, very talented cartoonist, and you can see his work all over The Spectator and...
Yes.
Statesman and all sorts of very swanky places. He kindly drew our caricature, which is I will always treasure. And then Jeffrey, you're the one who's done all the hard work. I mean,
yes,
that is hundreds of stories that you've told us.
I think
us.
We've done 200, nearly 200.
Oh, nearly 200 stories you've told us.
Yeah. I've got files now, 7 files of notes on endless stories, people and the terrible things they're capable of. So I don't know if that's good or bad, but I certainly haven't. Anyway, I've got to thank you, Mo. Thank you for being here. Thank you for helping me. Thank you for suggesting it. And most of all, thank you for sharing it with me. I've really enjoyed it.
Yeah, it's been a blast.
And so I better end by saying, as I always do, sadly, bad things happen to good people, so do please be careful out there.